Good morning and welcome to episode 238 of Taking Charge Podcast with you from Vista, California, David Hine of Hine News. Thank you for stopping by. Yes, California. I'm out on the road for a couple weeks and have to excuse perhaps the sound quality. I am actually on the road and I don't have my microphone with me. And so doing this on my usual tape recorder, hoping that this is good enough. And it's going to have to be good enough because it's not going to get any better. No, this is just recording it on my recorder so that I can pack a little bit lighter and don't have to lug around my microphone. The other two episodes on this trip will actually be with the microphone, but have to excuse me for this episode. Yes, I'm actually on the road and spending a little bit of time with family now after the Final Four. So, but I did want, of course, get you a podcast this week. Not gonna be loads and loads of analysis. Obviously, just not loads of time. But you know, I want to get you something. If you want to get in contact with the show, you can reach me on Hine News on Twitter at Hine News, H-E-I-N-N-E-W-S. You can also go to the Facebook group, Taking the Charge, Taking the Charge Podcast. If you put that into the search bar, you can find us that way. There's the website, hinenews.com. hinenews@gmx.de is the website. There's also the iTunes where you can rate and review the show. You can go to Instagram. I'm at Mr. Hine News. Trying to take some more pictures, behind the scene pictures and videos. Did some from my time at the NCAA Final Four in Arizona, in Phoenix, Glendale. And then you can also go and help sponsor the show. That is at patreon.com/takingthecharge, all one word. Okay, so Final Four, first of all, was first Final Four that I've been to. It was pretty interesting to be there. Saw a few people that I know that I've met over the years, a couple of wonderful colleagues that it's been a while that I haven't had a chance to see, and it was wonderful to catch up with them a little bit. Definitely realized that Hine News is a much more of an international basketball brand, if you will, that there's not as much knowledge of what I do in the States, which is totally cool. But it was nice to be part of the NCAA Final Four atmosphere. Also, I am a member of the U.S. Basketball Writers Association, so I had a chance to go to their awards luncheon. And I had a chance to listen to a couple of just longtime journalists, writers, just talk a little bit about what the game means to them and what writing means to them and what the relationships they have built over these years meant to them. And that was very touching and very bordering on inspiring. It was definitely gives you perspective on what you're doing. So very good to be there and take that in. The two Final Four semifinal games were obviously very, very exciting. Really coming down right to the end. Actually, obviously the final as well. But the first two games were obviously a little more exciting and a little more entertaining to watch. The final was, for much of the game, kind of ugly, with referees, you know, probably being a little too important, if you will, just with the number of fouls that were called, and it would have been nicer to to see the players decide the game much more. They, in the end, you know, a couple of big shots, and you know, even the you know, you say all the fouls were called, and then at the same time, there was the play at the end where there was the jump ball, and actually, I think it was Meeks who was actually out of bounds, and the referee was standing right there and didn't call it. So that was, you know, another kind of a unfortunate incident with the referees. But, you know, it is kind of what it is, and just a little bit unfortunate. But, you know, in the end, some big plays were made by the players. And so, you know, but, you know, seeing 77,000 in a huge stadium is pretty impressive, pretty daunting, pretty kind of difficult to watch, just because it's so large, and you know, I was up in the press box kind of far up and away, and kind of hard to follow, but you know, just it was pretty nice being there, and definitely glad I came in to watch that. Heading off to Portland the day tomorrow, and then the Hope Summit is on Friday. That's obviously a showcase of some of the best players in the world against the top Americans, and should be a pretty entertaining game. Probably one of the most key factors, I guess, on the the world team is maybe how the Europeans are able to fit into the flow of the game. You know, the Canadians that are there are pretty ball dominant guys, and obviously high, you know, super high talented, Wigginton and Shai Alexander, Nick Walker, and then RJ Barrett, you know, obviously pretty high level guys. But you know, where does Kostya Mercedes, you know, how does he kind of fit in? You know, what does Sikaris, what kind of role does Tata Sedaris play? You know, what can Semenich do? How good is Semenich's English that he can, you know, take part and be active, and, you know, really Bashidi and Semenich are the two guys who are really anxious to see how they perform and how they interact and how they fit in. Isaiah Hartenstein, the big German, is going to fit in easily. He's a big who plays defense and rebounds really well, and you know, has a great outlet pass, is a great passer, can finish and dunk and shoot outside, and has a little bit of a mid-range game, and so he'll be able to find his spots and to impact the game. Dos Anjos will be a guy who just is a hustler, and you know, just grits out plays and offensive rebounds, defense, and then Americans, you know, obviously it'll be great to see Porter, see what he's able to do. This will be the first time I've seen him play. Quaddy Green, obviously it'd be pretty exciting to see the 97, the U17 guys from last year, Carter, Trent Jr., off the top of my head, the other guys. Sexton, obviously he's a scoring machine, so it'll be interesting to see how much he's able to produce here in this game. Yeah, so just a really cool event, and looking forward to it. I'll see both teams practice once before on Thursday, and then check out the game Friday, and then off to Toronto. And on the 10th, which I guess is that'll actually be before the next week's show, will be the All-Canadian, the BIOS, the All-Canadian game, so that'll be interesting to watch. Obviously some big names there, but kind of talk a little bit more about that in the aftermath. So Summit, I'm pretty sure it's on TV somewhere. I believe it might be even on ESPN, but you can find that. The All-Canadian game, maybe TSN, which is the sports network, the Canadian sports network, and I don't know exactly if that's going to be on there, but that might be a place where that BIOS the All-Canadian game is. All right, just so that I can get some stuff done here and spend some time with some family here. Head to the interview of the week. No, this is not going to be NCAA stuff. It's actually something totally different, but I hope for all of you something interesting. A couple weeks ago, FIBA announced a long-term, I believe, to 2023, I believe. 2023, that might be. The agreement with Nike. And so I wanted to find out, you know, as people who have, you know, followed the show in the past know, I'm a guy who's pretty interested in business, sports business. And so I wanted to hear some details about this. About this contract, and then also since I had the individual on, he has a chance to do some. He deals with some other factors, issues within FIBA, which were also interesting for me, so I wanted to address some of those, see what his opinion were on some of those. Without further ado, the individual I'm going to be talking to is Frank Lenders, and he is the Director General of FIBA Marketing, FIBA Media and Marketing Services. Again, talking about the Nike FIBA deal. So, without catch you on the other side of that one. Okay, so on the show this week we have Frank Lenders, the Director General of FIBA Media and Marketing Services. Mr. Lenders, thank you for coming on.
It's a pleasure, Dave, to be on your show.
Okay, so the main reason why I wanted to get in contact with someone from FIBA and ended up getting to have a chat with you was the news, I guess a couple of weeks ago now, that FIBA agreed to an 11-year agreement sponsoring marketing with Nike. And, you know, kind of got some headlines and sort of business publications and business outlets and whatnot. Not, you know, it wasn't a load of news, and I'm sort of a business, sort of a sports business guy. And so I always am interested in hearing, more details about some of the sports, business, deals that go down and whatnot. So I guess first of all, let's just to get an idea of what you do, to kind of have an idea of who we're talking to. Like we said, Director General of FIBA Marketing, Media and Marketing Services. Maybe just describe a little bit your, duties with FIBA.
Okay. No, I'm happy to do that. I mean, the FIBA Media and Marketing Services SA is a wholly owned separate unit within FIBA, responsible for all the commercial matters. For the revenues generated by FIBA globally, for all the national team competitions, as you know, that FIBA runs. So it's something that exists since 2012. That is something that you know, we have created with FIBA also shortly after I started working with FIBA and had the opportunity to do so around the new calendar. And then when there was a discussion about, you know, how to structure commercial matters in the federation, we came with this model, which is a you know, quite an innovative model for federations, for governing bodies, but which allows, you know, to have the right distance, I would say, between the sport, the politics, and the business when that distance is necessary. But at the same time, it's still very much an integrated entity as well, very close to the federation when it needs to be close. And what does it mean? It is predominantly focused around two parts. One is, let's say, the media and media rights side, so television broadcasting and other content rights, data rights, etc. And the other block is the marketing side, as we call it, which is sponsorship, licensing, branding. And to make it even more complete, what I describe now is that in this setup on FIBA, actually we have two very strong partners on each of these two blocks. So also in the last year, we concluded a long-term agreement with the Perform Group, based in the UK and active around the globe, for FIBA Media, which runs until 2033, so very long term. And for the same duration on the marketing side, we concluded a strategic partnership with the group Wanda Infront, so Infront's the sports marketing group within the Wanda Empire, so to say, which is a big Chinese group. So without confusing your listeners too much, the FIBA Media and Marketing Services has those two main pillars. And the Nike agreement, as we are going to talk about, falls within that second pillar in the marketing sponsorship side. And that is another strong building block for FIBA going forward, this long-term deal, which is not a typical sponsorship agreement, I would say, but it is more a strategic sponsorship deal, also with a very long-term horizon.
We'll come to the Nike in a second. Just a sort of, I guess, a logistical question. So if you talk to federations, right, who are the people that you talk to, as far as, I guess in the one side of media services, you talk to whatever communications director or whatever, and then marketing, whatever marketing person they have in the hierarchy of the federation, then, probably, right?
Yeah, typically in a federation, it depends, of course, how big or how small the federation
is.
Exactly. But the people that would occupy the role in the federation typically would be a commercial director of a federation,
okay,
which also has some exposure to the sponsorship and to the media side. That's okay. Typically the counterpart. But again, it depends on the structure
federation.
And the size of the federation. Exactly.
Okay. Let's get down to strategic deals. Just maybe give us a basic description for those maybe who might not have read it and don't want to take the time and read it, but want to know about it. Maybe give us a basic description, breakdown of the deal between FIBA and Nike.
Yeah, Nike is a partnership which runs for 11 years, or better said, three World Cups. Because as you know, the next World Cup is China 19. Then there will be one in 2023 and one in 2027. So the agreement with Nike covers those three World Cups, but not only that, it covers the whole period also in terms of the World Cup cycle. So it also includes the Women's World Cup, because of course I just spoke about the Men's World Cup, it's the Women's, and it also includes the Continental Cups that fall in that cycle. So when we talk about the Eurobasket in Europe or the America Cup in the Americas, et cetera, et cetera. And it also includes the youth categories, the under 17, under 19, on a world level.
Okay. Only world, not Europeans and the Continentals, just the world.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. So it the flagship, I would say, in each of the cycles is the World Cup, the Men's World Cup, and as you also know, this is now not only, you know, combined with the other events that I mentioned, but it's also on the back of the complete relaunch of the FIBA calendar with the qualifiers. So the qualifiers, the road to China 2019, when we talk about the World Cup, and the road to the Continental Cups when we talk about 2021, for instance. So it's that entire you know, package or inventory, however you want to describe it.
And so what are the biggest things that you will get from Nike in this deal?
Well, that's an important question, Dave, because typically in a, let's say, more traditional sponsorship agreement, there would be an exchange where, let's say, the rights holder would give certain rights, a rights package, certain elements that are that a company would obtain in return for, to a large extent, a monetary value, so for a rights fee, as well as maybe some product supply. Now, the main pillars, fair to say, in relationship with Nike, are not only these elements of the rights fee and the product supply, which Nike will also contribute. The main driver, I can say, also from FIBA in this, have been two other elements or two other categories or buckets, as people might call it. And one is, let's say, the whole promotional support and the marketing promotional support that Nike can give with its, tremendous, network of organizations and campaigns around the world. And the other part is a relationship with the players. Because as you know, Nike is an absolute market leader in the basketball category, and they are a market leader in terms of sale of shoes and products. But they're also the number one in terms of having relationship with the athletes. If you see the number of players that they work with, or they, are on their roster in the NBA in particular, but also in other competitions, it's clear that they're extremely strong or even dominant. And to take a step back on this, the strategic interest for FIBA is to bring national team competitions in particular to a next level, and to bring the World Cup to a next level. And in order to do that, we need to invest, and investments are not only to be made with money, but there's a lot of areas where, let's say, money can't buy certain investments even. And we believe that with Nike, we have a win-win, because in the areas of marketing and players, they can support basketball and FIBA in elements that money can't buy.
Win-win. So what would you say are the biggest things Nike gets from FIBA? I'd say probably the biggest one is an entirely new market, national team games, these qualifiers and whatnot. But what would you say are some of the biggest things that Nike get out of it?
Well, that's a very good question also. I mean, Nike's interest, I think, and based on our discussions, of course, that's something they would need to answer more than me. But I think is on the one hand side, it is global footprint and going deep in all the markets where we will play and where national teams are playing. I think number two is the fact that they share the view of FIBA that the Basketball World Cup is having tremendous upside potential. To put it bluntly, the other way around, is that the World Cup is currently underperforming. So they also see that there is upside to be made, which is good for FIBA, but also for them as a partner. And thirdly, I'm thinking more generally, thinking a more macro approach. I mean, you will understand that if you are a market leader and an absolute market leader in the basketball category, then you can grow your business by either to improving that market share, but that might be very difficult if you're already at levels of 70, 80, 90%. Or you can say we develop the whole cake. We grow the sport, and when the sport gets bigger overall, then the biggest beneficiary is, of course, always the market leader.
How much Will the sort of Nike ad campaign that they, you know, like to do in North America, how much do you see that being reproduced in Europe? And maybe I'd say Europe probably be the easiest way to do it, but the easiest place to do it, but that have that ad campaign sort of reproduced in other continents then?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, again, this is a Nike question, but Nike has their own, very much their own way of developing and running ad campaigns, and we're not gonna insist on influencing that. They would never allow it, but that's also not what we want to do. So we're not gonna tell them you must run a FIBA campaign with the logo of FIBA on the left, on the right hand side, etc., etc. We just know that they, you know, have enormous marketing power, financially and otherwise, and it's our interest to bring basketball and FIBA national team basketball more into, let's say, in that parameter. And I don't, the way I know it from them, is it's not that they are developing a campaign in the U.S. and the rest of the world has to copy that. The U.S. will have very own view, and other markets will have their own influence on a national or on a continental or regional level. But to take the example, the next World Cup is in China. I mean, China is obviously the second market also for Nike and Nike basketball. And we are already, of course, in coordination with the headquarters in Portland, but we're already in touch with the Nike China people. And they will, to a large extent, you know, use the assets in their own campaigns. They will run their own campaigns, and they're very excited already, and with the opportunities that the World Cup will bring to them. So I think our challenge will also be, and our opportunity is to work with the Nike organizations, as we do in China now, to make them use the opportunities to the max in their promotion campaigns, advertising campaigns, above the line, below the line, so that it's very successful for Nike and at the same time also for the World Cup and for FIBA.
Let's say the normal international basketball spectator, television spectator, also, you know, person who goes to games, you know, both club games, national team, you know, and whatnot, watches, you know, national team competitions, you know, that are affected, you know, by this deal. So not the continental youth tournaments, but, you know, the FIBA, the FIBA America Cup and whatnot. For those fans, what changes will they see because of this deal? Just by being either at the arena or watching the product on TV or live streamed, is that something you can kind of
now? There's a few things very tangible that we'll see. I mean, they will see the Nike brand, of course, in the arena, on the court, around the court, and worn by officials, volunteers, and the staff. So that is one element. Secondly. They will hopefully around it see a lot of Nike basketball campaigns and activities which are, let's say, naturally linked to these events. And thirdly, I mean, in the overall promotion, and that's what we're also talking with Nike now, is of course we also would like to and also an intrinsic point is to see how we can, engage the Nike players, the current players, and also the former players in the overall communication and promotion. So what does that last point mean? Is that, we hope that in the right times outside of the regular, outside of the NBA season, for instance, if we talk about the top players, that they will be available to attend events, that they will be, available in campaigns. And let's say some of the legends of the past that even during the season, as we speak now, of course, when the NBA season is coming towards the time of the playoffs, is that those legends can be used in different side events, promotions, and promotional campaigns.
Two summers ago, my eyes were opened up by a pretty unfortunate scene in Crete, where Dragan Bender and the Croatian national team federation had a dispute over shoes, and that moment opened my eyes. I do a lot of youth basketball coverage, but that moment right there, where you know a guy who was on the poster for the tournament, and for the really a team that could have beaten the Americans and won the title. And he does not play at the World Championship because of a shoe dispute. That opened my eyes and said, all right, I need to pay attention to shoes as well. There's, you know, when players, you know, players will not go to, in America, players will not go to certain colleges because those colleges have affiliation with certain shoe companies. Certain players will not be allowed to go to certain showcase events because they're affiliated with another shoe. So a Nike guy can't go to a Reebok event, and Under Armour guy can't go to Hoop Summit or, you know, whatever. With such a close agreement with Nike, I know this is a nasty question, and not a nasty question, but it's an unfortunate topic. But I do want to at least ask it. Is there any way that this could lead to some sort of dispute that a player or whatever doesn't want to or can't or federation that something like that could happen again because of this deal?
No, I understand the question, Dave, for sure, and I remember the incident you raised. The simple answer is no. I mean, but no, because no, and I tell you why. I mean, firstly, I mean, FIBA has had apparel partners in the past, mm-hmm. and have worked, you know, very well until the end of last year, for instance, with the people from Champion for the apparel and Peak the shoes. And that has not been a part in that context of sponsoring an event. The incident you raised was related to a sponsorship deal of a federation, mm-hmm. and certain rules that were established there. So that's number one. Secondly, nothing in our agreement with Nike relates to prohibition or whatever on that side. On the contrary, I mean, you know, the relationship with Nike is that athletes come first. You don't compromise on that in that context. So there is no provision that we cannot, and even in campaigns or whatever, that we cannot involve other players or promotion or all of that kind. So I think thirdly, the point you raise is related to and I will speak on my own, not even under a FIBA or FIBA media and marketing role. I speak as Frank. In my personal view, these head to toe deals with athletes are something of the past. I mean, you know, if you look even in the world of soccer, I mean, you know, I have a history in football myself. I know, like in Germany for a long time, the national team had a head-to-toe Adidas deal that even all the players in the national team had to wear Adidas shoes, and that was not sustainable in the end. I understand at the time there was an agreement, I think, in Croatia with the Jordan brand that then prevented Bender, who had already an Adidas deal for the youth category, not to play. And my view is that shoes should be free in football and also in basketball. I think one of the last standing examples, which I know, but you maybe know many more, is like in China, in the CBA league, there is also an arrangement with manufacturer Li Ning, which outfits all the teams in the league, including shoes.
Oh, wow.
And okay. Actually, earlier this year, you might have seen the incident with Yi, who came back from the Lakers and on one of the games, you know, took off his shoes and came back with another brand in the second half or wherever it was. So
I didn't see that.
Yeah, no, have a look.
It's okay.
Quite prominent because the Li Ning shoes, it got so much attention that it looked like it was piloted even. Because, of course, it's a superstar player. He sat down, took off his shoes and came back with the other brand in the rest of the game. And then he was fined quite heavily for doing that. And he went back to the Li Ning shoes as we speak now. I think he's now in the playoffs of the CBA League. So, personal view, I think these head-to-toe deals are bad. Honestly, that's my personal view. To come back to our Nike agreement, you know, from Nike's point of view, there is no limitation on that contractually or otherwise. And talking a little bit more to them, I also know that if you take examples as, you know, USA Basketball, I mean, which is a very much also partnership of Nike. You know, you have seen there also Steph Curry playing in that team and others which don't wear Nike shoes.
That's probably most of the Nike issue that I kind of want to. I do want to, if it's okay, you know, being the media and marketing service director general, I would like to ask about a couple different topics that would be interested in hearing what you say about it. Is that okay?
Yeah, go ahead.
You were with team marketing during the inception of the UEFA Champions League in 92-93, according to what I've been able to find out. FIBA's kind of going through a major change right now as well, you know, with the Basketball Champions League and now with the reintroduction of the FIBA windows. What kind of parallels do you see between those two times, what kind of parallels do you have between those two times?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think, of course, you know, the Football Champions League was, I mean, it's still like a study book case on transformation of a competition on all aspects when it comes to the competition format, the branding, the integration of broadcasts and sponsorship rights, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It set a lot of standards in that period. And that of course, was exciting to see the transformation. When we come to FIBA and when we look at the national team calendar, of course, the as I always say, the proof is in the pudding. We'll see it in the longer term. But already now, I think we see that the market, the people that we deal with, they are seeing it as a transformation and as a quantum leap for national team basketball. Why? I mean, the one of the main reasons why is that in the past, these partners have been able to buy, and to show 2 weeks in summer, which came as, sometimes as a flash in the pan, and it was fantastic. 2 weeks of a World Cup or 2 weeks of a Eurobasket or what have you. And then the sport went dark for most of the rest of the year. So you have a sport which is an indoor sport, which then in the summertime, at least the European summertime when people are on the beach, is having its tournament indoor and the rest of the year is largely absent. And now these people see is that there is more frequency, there's more consistency, but there's also more of a logical path to these tournaments created through these qualifiers. So, you know, this is a big transformation. And we've all heard the things about the difficulties in the windows and the players, and that's all true. And also, it will be, you know, of course, you know, a real positive challenge also for the federations to deliver all of that. What I wanted to say just is that the people that we deal with in media and marketing, and you know, Nike is an example on the marketing side, but on the media side, of course, we are now in the process of working with through FIBA Media, with, you know, broadcasters or media partners in every single country. And we see that the feedback so far is extremely positive, because these people have been looking for something like this, that for a period of 3 or 5 years, they can acquire a product which has some more frequency, longevity, and ability to plan, and is a more logical component to their, you know, to what they have to offer. So, you know, the results so far seem to more than confirm that, you know, this was a right thing to do for basketball.
Sticking with the windows, how is the planning of the windows coming along? You know, maybe what are the next steps that you guys are doing in regards to media marketing assistance for the federations? You know, through my conversations with players that will then play for their national teams here in Europe, you know, a lot of them say, you know, I have no idea what's going to happen. In that regard, is there also going to be a sort of a push or whatever to also kind of reach out to the players, or, you know, whatever player associations, player unions, or what have you, to kind of you know, give them more information about? I know the calendar, you know, how it all works and all that stuff, but, you know, that you know, to just kind of try to give these players and also clubs and whatnot more information. Maybe talk about maybe the actual process of going through it. Where is it at? What are the next couple of things that the media and marketing services department is going through?
Well, I mean, it's really
right around the corner. Really, if you think about it, we're already it's the end of March, and these games are starting in November. So.
Well, I'm going to be even more concrete, Dave. I mean, we are now in the planning phase, and in 6 weeks, on the 7th of May in Guangzhou in China, we will have the draw for the qualifiers. Yeah, for the qualifiers in Africa, in Asia Pacific, in the Americas, and in Europe. So, you know, that's going.
May 8th? May 7th. Has that been announced?
No. The draw that's going ahead, and what I have to say is that you know, the again, you're talking to the person from media and marketing, and so media and marketing meaning dealing with the broadcast partners and the commercial partners. And of course, with the broadcasters, we are in the planning phase to produce all these games and to distribute the games. And actually, as an incredibly positive point, I have to say, is that the FIBA media team, which we run through our friends from Perform, as I mentioned, already said, listen, all these qualifier games, the host broadcasting, so the production of the games, is going to be, you know, under the responsibility of that team, you know, ultimately. So we work with broadcasters or partners in the markets to produce that feed on this high-level production. But the federations themselves don't need to worry about TV production, which is, compared to other sports, a big plus. Yeah? So that is on the media side. When it comes to the communication and to the planning, and I'm not trying to push that out of my area, but communication is, of course, always an element with the public and with the partners. But, you know, when it comes to the planning and also working with the national federations, what I can say is that the team of our events director has had already extensive workshops with the national federations in each of the continents. So they have done this in Munich with the European federations. They have done this in the Dominican Republic with the American federations. They have done this in Cote d'Ivoire with the African federations. They have done this in Lebanon with the Asian and Oceanian federations. So these people are, you know, there's a whole machine, of course, behind it in terms of making sure that come November, not only FIBA is ready, but also the national federations need to be equipped to organize these games. So, and that is a, you can say that's a big challenge for the federations, but arguably that's also one of the biggest opportunities for the world of basketball, is to give the federations that skill and the ability and the experience to organize games in their own country. Yeah, most of the federations, or many of the federations, I have to say, I don't know if it's most, they do not organize games in their country because they have a team and the team goes to the tournaments in their continent or in the World Cup. But, you know, they don't organize a lot of games, and therefore also the people in that country hardly see the national team play a game which counts
at home.
So this is the opportunity. But obviously, that requires a lot of work on all levels.
You mentioned May 7th, the draw. Is that going to be for all of the continental competitions then, at the same time, on the same day?
Yes, exactly. So it's basically going to be four draws.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's going to be a draw for each of the continents, but it's all four is going to be in Guangzhou, in Guangdong province in China.
And are there going to be separate, let's call them celebrities or whatever, popular players from each of the continents doing those continents, or is it all going to be?
Exactly. Okay. Well, I mean, I cannot reveal too much.
Okay, no, you don't have to.
That's always a good way to say I cannot reveal too much when things are still being developed in detail. I didn't realize that
they were all there. So that's cool. So there's something May 7th.
To come back to our earlier discussion there, I mean, that is, of course, one of the events where we hope that our relationship with Nike will support us in bringing some legends of the game to Guangzhou.
Of course. You mentioned one of the main points with this transition, this move to bring back the windows, was that the federations, you had just talked about it, you know, they can host games at home to increase exposure. As this whole transition nears, what unforeseen benefits have FIBA discovered through the planning?
So you mean, we are developing this, what are the benefits that we hadn't thought of?
Exactly. Or, you guys had, okay, this is good for this and this and this, and then you went through all the planning and talking to this people and organizing everything. What were some of the unforeseen benefits that they have actually discovered?
Well, of course, we like to say we foresaw everything, but to be honest, it brings FIBA even more closer to all of the federations and the basketball community in the countries. And then when I talk about FIBA, I don't not just talk about FIBA in Switzerland, but I also talk about in the one FIBA. I talk about the regional offices in Munich and Puerto Rico, in Abidjan and in Lebanon and in Australia. So you work closer with those federations. That also, you know, that develops a different relationship, and sometimes that also shows really limitations. It also shows problems. I mean, very as you come across. I mean, what needs to be done. But overall, I think it's that relationship which is a positive plus. I think ultimately it will give it will, apart from having games and having visibility, it will strengthen the whole the whole framework, the whole structure of FIBA in each and every country, and it will strengthen the national federations, which at the end of the day are the 200 and plus federations that work on this on day to day. That's not in a headquarter in Geneva.
Obviously, this is going to be easier for Spain and Italy and USA and and some of the bigger countries to go through. And it's going to be a little more difficult for other countries, smaller countries, or countries that have have very little experience. Maybe some of the largest pitfalls that you and your team and FIBA in general are trying to help the federations avoid in this whole process.
Yeah, I mean it's as you said. I mean, with my experience, there's always challenges. It's only that the challenges or the difficulties for the big federations are different type of challenges than for the smaller ones. Mm-hmm. I mean, for the smaller ones, very often it's about the basics. It's about infrastructure. It's about, concretely, it's about quality of venues. It's about the facilities there. It's about lighting. It's about, the flooring is about, it can be about accommodation, about transport. I mean, those elements. And for the bigger federations, this can come up to player release, insurance, promotion. I mean, there will always be different challenges there. But again, for each of them, there's also different types of rewards in this. Yeah? And I think we will see that those federations that really, proactively take this on board and see the opportunities, they will be the biggest beneficiaries on their level of this new calendar. I mean, that will be able to exploit it. And this is one of the things that is happening in these workshops, rather than just focus on the nuts and bolts of you must do this and you shall do that, is also give that's the aim, to give federations some ideas, and also amongst themselves, let's say, give them the tool to better use this and to fish bigger fish. It's not only to bring them the food, but it's teach them how to fish. And there's a lot of things to be learned from each other, apart only from FIBA. But it is for a federation to say, okay, you're going to host these games now. So what can you do in your market with the local communities, with your sponsors, with your partners, to benefit from that and to create partnerships and to create value and also to get some more value and revenues for your federation.
One last issue I'd like to ask you about, kind of goes to the FIBA windows again and addresses the NBA. A lot of people, saying, oh, the NBA players aren't going to be playing. I mean, okay, most of them will play most of them will be available to play in the June window, and then obviously they'll be available for the September window. Over the course of this, we can come back also to the Nike agreement, because it stretches out to the 2017 FIBA Basketball World Cup. Is there a chance we'll see all the NBA, or not all, but we'll see the NBA guys in all of these windows, maybe over the life of this Nike contract? Also considering that Nike has a direct interest in it, also being able to promote their own athletes on a national team level. I mean, I don't know. I know the CBA, whatever, was agreed, I think, last year, year before, whatever. And so I don't know. And I don't know the length of that. Is that something that you think that maybe even bringing Nike on board, might have actually be a possibility down the road? I mean, it's one of the big sticking issues for everybody when they, because you look at you were in the Champions League, and in soccer and football, and everybody nowadays, all the clubs, even the Bayern Munichs, the Real Madrids, they all give their players You know, they all will release their players, you know, even the greatest leagues in the world. Whereas in basketball, I mean, it's something that has to be developed over time and whatnot, and it's hard to go one for one and hope everybody's is released and everything. But, you know, is there like a little glimmer of hope then at the end of this Nike contract? Just what do you think? What do you think about it?
Well, no, I mean, just to be very clear, point number one, it would be great if somewhere down the line, in whatever the time horizon is, the NBA players would be available for all the windows, no doubt. That is clear. Point number two, in the current system, it is crystal clear to everyone, and there I mean everyone, is that in the winter window, so to say, these players are not available. You know, just to again give you market feedback, as I said, we are in the broadcast market with FIBA Media and the Friends from Perform since well advanced, and you know the market fully understands that these players are not available in those windows, and that has not been an unsurmountable issue with the broadcasters, because you know they know what it is. We haven't sold them smoke and mirrors. They know exactly what it is and what it is not, and they still think it's a good product. And they, you know, they are behind this. Plus, and that's again, then, you know, another element of this is that, you know, the playing for the national team is something special anyway, and the national teams will anyway bring good teams together. And we also know that this will give some opportunities to other talent to flourish. But of course, I refer back to point number one. If it happens, it is great. That is no doubt. Thirdly, just to be very clear on this and not have any misunderstanding, is that you know, Nike has nothing to do with NBA windows or not. I mean, and that has never been you know, discussed, has never been a consideration that we would say, okay, Nike, can you help us make that happen or not? I mean, that is unrealistic anyway, and it's not the way it has been teed up in this agreement. And anybody who knows Nike a little bit, and I speak from my own experience, they know that, you know, the athlete always comes first. In that sense, anyway, and the athlete is the primary actor and the primary person that the company cares about. So you know, I think, as I said, if this calendar develops as we all hope, and it becomes something that you know, becomes established, and it becomes a natural extension, then you know, I think everybody will be happy. But you must also realize, in terms of the sport and in terms of the economic reality, that things are and the way they are at the moment. And I think, as far as I've witnessed it here, the FIBA-NBA relationship is very strong and respectful. And you know, the calendar as we have it now was developed at the time by FIBA people here, together with you know, with the input of the NBA, and you know, what happens will happen. But you know, there is no concrete plan or view in that regard at the moment. It's also not what is really fundamental, as we've seen it so far. You know, luckily from the feedback of the broadcast market, and you know, I think Nike will not mingle in that discussion out of respect for everyone.
What happens will happen. I think that's a great way to close it. Frank Leenders, the Director General of FIBA Media and Marketing Services, thank you very much for taking so much time and informing me and my listeners about some of the details about this deal, and then also about some other Very interesting topics, and I couldn't resist getting some input about some of these other issues, and you've been fantastic. Thanks again for all of the time that you've taken out of your busy day.
The pleasure is mine. Thanks, Dave. Thanks for your interest, and thanks for all your support and interest into what happens in the world of basketball.
Like I said, I'm a business, I'm a sports business junkie, so I love talking business deals. So I don't know if everybody else likes it, but for me, it's fascinating, and so good enough.
Frank, all right,
appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot. Bye bye.
Okay, fantastic. That was, like I said, for those who might not be interested in all the sports, business stuff, I hope that was at least somewhat interesting for you. And I know I learned quite a bit. It'll be interesting to see how much influence Nike has on the sponsoring, on the advertising, the commercials, whatnot, that FIBA comes up with for national team events. I guess that's it this week. Definitely thank you for listening to the show. Again, if you want to help keep the show alive and help sponsor the show, you can go to patreon.com/takingthecharge, and you can donate as much or as little as you want. It's basically just to show your love and support for the show, and thank you to those who have done so in the past. It's more than appreciated. I will let you go. Just let you know what you're going to be listening to. The song is called California Blues. I don't have the blues, even though I'm in California, but I do not have the blues. But the song is called California Blues, and it's by the group Organs. So enjoy it. Enjoy the next week of basketball. We'll talk to you next week from Toronto. So without further ado, here are the Organs. And again, till next week.
This is Patrick Baumann, Secretary General of FIBA, and you're listening to Taking the Charge. Enjoy.